I thought one of the things that we should talk about is Ajinigbo and Ogu's relationship in general, and the fact that Ajinigbo is never given a voice in the novel. We never see things through his perspective. So the novel is told through three primary characters, Olana, Ogu, and a Englishman, Richard.
Yeah, how we never hear Ajinigbo's voice. Why is that? Why do you think?
I think we're not supposed to. I think it's because we're not supposed to like him. I think it's because if we see it from his perspective, then that will make us empathize with this character, who is, in a lot of ways, problematic. Like, he spends a lot of time ranting and raving about imperialism and colonialism, which is fair.
Yeah.
And yet he is part of the problem. He's part of an intellectual elite, and he looks down on Ogu. And there was this one passage that I found really interesting. So Ogu wants to... Ogu is a very good cook, and he wants to grow herbs in the garden so he can cook better food for his master. But there is another... There's a gardener that works for the complex that they live in, and Ogu basically approaches Ajinigbo and he says, "I want to plant a garden," and this is what follows. "A garden? Master stopped to sip some water and turn a journal page. No, no, no. Outside is Jomo's territory and inside is yours. Division of labor, my good man. If we need herbs, we'll ask Jomo to take care of it." Ogu loved the sound of "division of labor, my good man," spoken in English. I mean, this is just like the most, like, it's just begging for a Marxist interpretation, right?
Yeah.
Like, the fact that Ajinigbo is so up on his high horse throughout the novel about the problems of imperialism, and yet he inflicts those kinds of structures on his houseboy and has no empathy, uses diction and jargon that, of course, like, Ogu has never had, contact with before. Like, it's, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I thought another indication of his hypocrisy is when he sleeps with his wife's servant, Amala.
Yes, his mother's servant.
His mother's servant,
yeah.
Amala.
Yeah.
And, you know, he tries to fob it off as something that his mother orchestrated, which she possibly could have done.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it doesn't negate at all his complicity
totally,
in the act. And you know that Amala had no inclination to sleep with this man.
Yeah.
And so, but he still exerts his power as a master onto his inferior. And so, in effect, he's reenacting the things that he's trying to revolutionize against.
Yes, I totally agree. And the fact that Olana can't see it just was something that I found really irritating in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like the fact that she's so in love with him, and they have this incredible sexual connection that he you know, patronizes her also. And I don't think throughout the book you have these discussions of what Ajinigbo is working on, his journal articles, blah blah blah. And Olana also works for university.
Yeah.
But we never are shown to them discussing what she does.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so focused on the man and his life that there's no... We witness Olana's interior world.
Yeah.
Which
is incredibly complex.
Yes. But we don't witness... He doesn't witness her intellectual one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I found was interesting. Yeah.
There's that whole imagery in the book about roped pots.
Yeah.
And a thing that draws Richard initially to Africa.
Yes, so to give this some context, Richard is an Englishman, and one day he's flicking through a journal and he sees an image of one of these earthenware rope pots that come from Nigeria that were dug up by archaeologists from I don't know, how many hundreds of years ago? But these very, very old pots. And Richard becomes obsessed with them, and it's why he moves to Nigeria. He initially becomes part of this expat community, which is filled...
This woman, I'm sure we'll get back to.
Yeah, she's Susan. She's a piece of work. and, yeah, so he leaves the expat community, gets involved with Kainene, and he figures himself as a writer, and he wants to write the story of Nigeria, and he wants to write the story of the Biafran War. And what's very interesting throughout the novel, at the end of major sections, there will be
notes
at the end. And the novel's called When the World Died, We Were Silent.
Yeah, that's
yeah. And it would be like this, this story begins with the history of Nigeria. And it's just a way, it was a really interesting construct, a way for the novel to be constructed because it gave the reader
context,
a historical context for what was going on.
But we think it's written by him.
Yeah, we think it's written by him, but it emerges in the final page of the novel that it's actually Ugu, another big spoiler, it's actually Ugu who's writing this book, and he's the one, I mean, Adichie is saying very, very clearly that it is Africans that should be writing African stories. And I wanted to ask you, do you think that Richard is just presenting a softer kind of colonialism?
Yeah, well, that's really interesting, because in the beginning of the book, he's talking about his love, about these rope pots, and all these African people that he meets are getting very offended, because he's like, I can't believe that, like, you know, 1,000 years ago, this culture was making these pots, and they're like, why can't you believe that? Whereas just as, like, progressive and artistic as, you know, any Western nation. And he complains about it, Kainini, and Kainini says, well, you can love something, but you can also condescend to it. They're not two mutually exclusive things.
That's true.
So, yeah, you always get the sense that Richard, as a white man, he can, as much as he wants to, he will never be able to truly inhabit this space as an equal.
And what makes him so interesting is that when he starts living in Nigeria, he sees himself as Nigerian, then when the secession happens, he sees himself as Biafran, and he has this moment where he says, this is my opportunity to tell the story of New Biafra, and I am Biafran, and I am one of these Biafrans. It's like, no, you're not. You're part of the culture that helped create this war. You know, you, and I think at times I definitely felt sympathy for Richard because he's such an other. But then again,
and he's so neurotic.
But I don't know, there was this bit at the end, after Kainene's disappeared, Richard confronts Kainene's old lover or best friend that he thinks is a lover or something.
Do you think that he was?
I don't think they were actually. Anyway, so Richard Richard thinks to himself in the indirect discourse of the novel. Very Jane Austen.
I wrote that exactly.
He says, you know, he hated the idea of Colonel Madu's, like, vile black hand on her. And the irony is Kainene is black. So Richard is still ingrained in these lines of thought, even if he thinks that he's outside of them. Everyone's a hypocrite in this novel, basically.
But then you sort of feel like, especially compared to Susan and some of the other white characters he meets, like those two journalists that come at the end, the redhead who's like a complete racist. In comparison to Susan, he seems so much more progressive and open-minded.
Well, Susan has this, start, Susan, he has to go to Susan's house because he gets cut off from these, the roads get barred, and he lands up at Susan's place, and Susan says something like, there are lots and lots of Igbo people here. Well, they are everywhere, really, aren't they? Not that they didn't have it coming to them, when you think about it, with their being so clannish and uppity and controlling the markets. Very Jewish, really. And to think they are relatively uncivilized, one couldn't compare them to the Yoruba, for example, who have had contact with the Europeans on the coast for years. I remember somebody telling me when I first came to be careful about hiring an Igbo houseboy, because before I knew it, he would own my house and the land it was built on. Another small whiskey.
I know, I've got that line, I'm like, awful. It's like completely unredeemable.
Yeah, so what do you think, I think it's very interesting how Adichie represents British people.
Yeah.
Do you think Richard is just as bad as Susan, but he just, in a more subtle way?
Yeah, I think he definitely, like, subscribes unconsciously to so many of the effects of an imperialist attitude, but possibly move on to, you know, a much more empathetic, much more aware stance if he didn't have so much neuroses about his relationship.
Also, what about Richard's houseboy,
Harrison? Yeah.
What did you think about Harrison?
I thought it was really, really interesting. He was kind of this, like, tragic comic character, this man who got so much joy from, like, knowing all these really pretentious things about English culture.
Yeah, so Harrison loves to cook
Western
Richard
food.
English food,
but he doesn't eat it at home.
But nobody likes this English food that he makes.
And Harrison's kind of the other side of the coin to Ugu, who has this innate who has this knowledge and gift and talent and recognizes things for what they are, whereas Harrison's completely oblivious.
Yes.
So it's kind of, but Harrison's playing kind of like the good African, I guess, to the white man. Completely obsequious.
Totally. But it's interesting that Richard doesn't, he doesn't trouble the dynamic and, and the relationship, and he doesn't treat Harrison in a way that's, that changes that dynamic, which I think is kind of condemning of his character. And he doesn't have a lot of patience for Harrison. Like, he doesn't say to Harrison at any point, like, you don't have to do this, or you can cook whatever and I'm going to eat it, and, like, please don't be so obsequious. He, there are points where he's actually quite, you know, harsh and brusque with Harrison.
I don't know. Do you see it as, like, because of Harrison? Do you think it's an element of race? Or do you think... I thought it was just because Harrison's annoying and...
Well, Harrison's annoying, but I think Richard's also annoying.
Yeah,
and I think Richard, I think in a lot of ways, drew power off his superiority.